If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speaker, Sheikh Javid. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Greetings to you and very welcome.
Thank you very much for having me on. I am at your service.
Thank you very much for accepting offer to come to the studio and shed some light on the jurisprudential laws or Islamic laws according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. And we are actually dealing with some of these jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Let me begin our episode with this question. What are the laws for aqiqa, right? And more specifically, I want to ask you if the meat is eaten by the parents of the very child that they have sacrificed, for example, or they have given out an aqiqa, is it okay for them to eat a part of that, for example, aqiqa, or not?
Right. Well, aqiqa is a sacrifice, okay, that is recommended to be carried out on the 7th day of the child's birth, whether a boy or a son. And there are certain conditions which are not mandatory, because the aqiqah itself is not mandatory. When it's something recommend. Is not mandatory, the rules and the restrictions around surrounding that
are flexible,
and they are not mandatory either. They are not obligatory.
What about the kind of sacrifice after 1 year, like the birth of a child?
Okay,
is it still called an aqiqa, or only it should be actually the we are calling the sacrifice after the 7th day of the birthday of a child?
Well, it is still called aqiqa if he has not given if he has not sacrificed an animal on the 7th day, so it can be done at any time or
in the future. Right.
Whether you are, let's say, 1 year old, or when you are 20 years old or 30 years old,
yes,
aqiqah will have its impact, or it is sawab for the person who sacrifices an animal and distributes the meat.
Yes.
The thing is that you said that whether it's allowed for the parents to receive a portion of the meat and eat or consume it, of course it is discouraged. It is not haram, but it's better for the parents not to eat, for the grandparents also, not to eat the meat of the animal slaughtered by them with the intention of aqiqah, to bless the child.
Right.
Yes.
And what about the kind of animal that they can sacrifice? Is there any rule for that?
Okay.
Like whether it's a chicken or a a sheep?
It is not a chicken that should be slaughtered, okay? It's a lamb, okay, that's healthy. For example, if there is, let's say, a lamb which is 2 years old, and it has horns, okay?
Right.
Horns. The horns should not be broken.
Oh.
The lamb itself should be healthy. If one of its legs is broken and the horn is broken, it's discouraged. Yes. It should be a perfect, healthy animal that you slaughter.
Only a lamb is referred to as the aqiqa. Oh,
it can be a cow, it can be a camel.
Yeah.
Okay, but people generally afford the lamb to sacrifice it.
But it's not certainly a chicken.
Yeah, it's not a chicken, of course.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, my guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, we know that sometimes when people get married, actually there is a period, like a gap in between their engagement and their marriage, right?
Right.
And my question is related to that gap, basically, between the engagement and the marriage. We know that the consent or agreement of the husband is necessary for the wife, usually during in the course of their lifetime.
Right.
But what happens to that small period or gap that we call the engagement period? They are engaged, the couple is engaged, but they are not married yet. So They are not married yet, they are engaged.
Do you mean that the marriage contract has not been solemnized?
Well, I mean, like, they have been engaged by giving out, for example, giving each other a ring. And they are officially registered as being engaged.
Okay.
Right? So whether it is the registrar office or somewhere else, or for example, a religious scholar has pronounced the engagement formula for them, so sort of like marriage formula.
Well, to be honest, there's no such thing as engagement without, you know, without marriage contract. When a man is engaged,
yes,
people often understand that, okay, there's no nikah between them. And they are still no mahram to each other. They are unrelated to each other.
Yes.
Engagement doesn't mean that they can sit together, laugh, and start joking, touching each other. No, because there's no nikah. If there's no nikah, then they are still no mahram to, they are non-mahram to each other, and they should stay away from each other.
Hmm.
They should not treat each other in the same way as couples or husbands and wives do that, treat each other. So they are non-mahram. But if a marriage formula has been recited,
yes,
and the marriage has been solemnized, even though consummation of the marriage has not taken place,
right,
they are mahram to each other. So all boundaries or limits are removed when the nikah is conducted.
Doesn't it depend on whether they are living together or not, cohabiting?
That's I want to talk about mahramiyya, okay,
uh-huh,
which is established,
right,
by nikah.
Right.
But when it comes to permission of, let's say, going out,
mm-hmm,
doing certain things, of course, as long as the husband does not provide his wife with food, clothing, and other regular expenses, and it's the father indeed,
right.
So the husband does not have the right to forbid his wife from going out of her father's house, because he does not provide his wife with food, clothing, other expenses. Okay, she is still in her father's house.
Right.
So it is her father who should allow him or allow her or permit her to go out or not to go out.
I see.
Yes. The husband in that case has no authority.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, what is the Islamic law regarding, the kind of prayer people are offering while they are doing so or while they are saying their prayer? There is the sound of music in the surrounding.
Well, it is basically it's not good to offer prayers in such places where music is being played and where one gets easily distracted. Okay, so what is not good is distraction, which right. takes place when one listens, when one hears music.
Right.
You, the person, the duty-bound person who prays, mm-hmm. does not listen to music intentionally.
Yes.
But it is something that, okay, comes to his ear and he hears the sound of the music. He's not to blame. But if there's no other place to offer his prayer, it's okay to pray in that very place. For example, someone goes to a wedding hall, and the wedding hall has a special place dedicated for people who want to pray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the same is the case with some airports. There are, for example, there is a special room for people who wants to pray.
Yes.
And of course, music is being played at the airport or at railway station or maybe wedding hall. And people cannot go out of the wedding hall or other places. And even if they go out, they don't find a place to offer their prayers.
Mm-hmm.
So music is there. So it's still permissible to offer one's prayer in that room or in that place.
Oh, okay. What about the situation where there is a non-mahram, somebody who's not related to you by marriage, actually?
Yes.
Is this kind of prayer that we are offering still valid? I mean, I'm talking about, for example, the women who are offering the prayer, but there is a non-mahram around in that very room, for example.
Of course, it is permissible. There's nothing wrong with that. When there's no other room for a lady, for a woman to offer her prayers, she is allowed to offer her prayers in that room or place where there is a non-mahram.
Right.
Okay. We do see a lot of ladies, especially those going to Atabat, to the holy sites in Najaf, Karbala, and Mashhad. They offer their prayers in the presence of lots of non-mahram people, okay?
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
I see. And what about the kind of hijab or covering that women should wear while offering their prayer? Should they go in full hijab? Like, let me define the hijab that I'm talking about. Like, for example, is chador the kind of piece of cloth that Muslim women usually wear, like covering from head to toe? Is that necessary or no? Just the kind of covering that those parts which are obligatory to be covered, enough?
Well, a particular type of hijab or clothing
yes.
is not recommended by Islam. Okay, Islam, for example, does not tell you what kind of hijab or what kind of dress you should wear, okay? It depends on common sense and common understanding.
Right.
Okay, chador, in my opinion, is a perfect hijab, okay?
Right.
But what is necessary, according to Islam, is to cover, for a woman, what is necessary is to cover her hair, neck, and then legs, and also feet if there are non-mahram people around the woman.
Right.
Otherwise, it's not necessary to cover the feet when there's no non-mahram. And of course, it's not necessary to cover the face. It's not necessary to cover the hands mm-hmm. up to the wrists.
Yes.
But other parts of the body must be covered.
Right.
Irrespective of whether there is any non-mahram around you, around a woman or not. Even if there's no one around the woman, she must still cover all parts of her body except the face and the hands up to the wrist.
And the color is not important.
The color is not important.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. That was Sheikh Javed, my guest speaker, talking with me in the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, where we talked about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. From me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, we bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم من جاء إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا